He's our voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Welcome, Dr. Brown. Good to have you. How are you?
Very good. How are you, Melissa?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So, Dr. Brown, I don't know if this is something you could specifically speak to, but I would imagine that most doctors would have these conversations with their patients. Earlier this week, I had Fran Mako on with AAA, and we were talking about the dangers of taking prescription drugs or even over-the-counter medications and then getting behind the wheel. There are more reports coming out from AAA saying that people may be getting on medications, not even realizing that it could make them dizzy or it could make them, fall asleep, things like that. And what was interesting is when I was talking to Fran, I said to her, well, isn't that something a doctor would say? Like, hey, don't take this if you're going to drive. And she wasn't sure because she's gotten mixed messages on this. People have said to her, no, because a medical professional cannot give advice or warnings unless it is asked by a patient. Those kinds of warnings. Like if I said to you, hey, the medication I'm getting on right now, is this going to impact my driving? According to some people, medical professionals can't just voluntarily say to you, hey, be careful when you're driving when you take this medication. I have to prompt you with that question. Is there any truth to that?
It's actually interesting. I mean, there's reality in there and there's legality associated mm-hmm. with it. So, in general, if a physician starts you on a medication that's obviously going to make you drowsy, they will mention it to you. You know, if there's side effects that occur with a medication, they will mention that to you. I think it becomes a little bit tricky when you say, if you take this medication, you can't drive. That gets a little bit tricky. I think on the labels of every medication along those lines, the pharmacist and the bottle on the actual bottle will actually say may cause drowsiness, heavy machinery. But I will tell you for anything along the lines of an opioid, anything morphine derivative, absolutely a doc will tell you that. And then the side effects usually associated with that. Now I would say that we're a little bit, we're always, a little bit more cautious about the driving aspect because if we go ahead and say you're not supposed to drive and then you end up driving and getting an accident, there's all these legal implications related to it. Okay. So, yeah, but in general, most physicians will warn people about it, and especially about new medications. Again, I don't think they'll specifically say driving, but they will specifically say if you start this medication, if you stand up fast, you may get dizzy. So you need to be careful about it. If you take this medication, it may cause constipation. So the big, big factors, and then the pharmacist usually fills in sort of the rest.
Okay. I guess that kind of makes sense. Obviously, you're right. Every medication does have all the warnings on the bottle and then some, but most people don't read them. But, I guess it makes sense if you were to tell every person, because I was saying to Fran, take Benadryl, for example. I've only known Benadryl to be Benadryl. It puts you to sleep. That's what I've always known my entire life because that's how it impacts me. However, when we use Benadryl once and only once on Chase, he had all these hallucinations. He was having outer body experiences. He was having night terrors, all these crazy things. And I thought, oh my gosh, what is happening? I didn't know if he was having an exorcism. I didn't know what was going on. And it turns out that 50% of children react to Benadryl that way. Others react the way I did, which is you pass out.
For a long time.
But I had never known that. It was not told to me when he took Benadryl. It was like, yep, Chase is old enough to take Benadryl. It should make him very sleepy. And I thought, great, that's how I've always known it. And then when he reacted that way, I was kind of annoyed that it wasn't like, well, there's a good chance he'll fall asleep, but there's also the chance that he is going to think he's in the middle of a war zone and you're not going to know what's going on. So I understand, obviously, you don't want to freak people out, but it is interesting that you have to kind of advocate for yourself with your doctors and say, well, is there a bad side effect? I think that's kind of what we're getting at. Do you say, is this going to potentially impact me driving? That's probably something you should do.
I think there's definitely a misunderstanding that medications that are over-the-counter We're talking about sort of what you get from your physician, but over-the-counter medications are not necessarily just, super, they're not just necessarily benign.
Right.
Yes, they actually do have, your Benadryl is a great example. I mean, people don't realize that, after using it every day for a series of time, it has a rebound effect.
Mm-hmm.
So when it causes sleepiness, now it causes you to be wide awake and have insomnia. Medical marijuana cards. I mean, people, if you start marijuana, you shouldn't be driving. I mean, there's obvious ones that are there. I mean, that's probably a little bit more along the lines. But instead, in one of the biggest overdoses that we have is related to acetaminophen.
Really?
That is probably one of the top causes of suicide, and then it causes basically liver failure.
Like
and
just
liver
taking
transplant.
A full bottle. I've seen that, I think, on television before. Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. So it's actually one of the most common attempts of suicide, and it's probably one of the worst attempts at suicide because it causes total liver failure, leading to liver transplant, if bad enough.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm wondering, is that why if you go to most pharmacies now, every over-the-counter medication is, they don't, they'll kind of ask you, but everything is locked up. So even when I want to go get Tylenol for Chase, I have to go to the pharmacist, say I have a 4-year-old, he needs Tylenol, and then they'll come over and unlock it. But I've noticed that everything, like over-the-counter medication, was never locked up, and now it is everywhere.
Yeah, I think part of the issue is, and then we can go into a little bit more of this, but I'm not going to go too much. But there's certain medications in particular that are not, they are over the counter, they're not prescription, mm-hmm. but medications like pseudoephedrine, which is commonly known as Sudafed,
yes,
is added in a lot of different medications, and there's bad repercussions, and there's potential for misuse
and
modifying
abuse.
Them
mm-hmm.
to make them a very bad drug.
I see. So. We're going down a slippery slope here with
exactly.
Dr. Brown. All right.
So we have to be careful about sort of certain medications, and that's what you see. So anything that sort of helps to dry up the nasal passages, so anything that has a D associated with it, something D, like Robitussin D or Sudafed D or something along those lines, that actually has that decongestant. That decongestant has this pseudoephedrine or phenylephedrine or something along, usually it's pseudoephedrine. And that actually will, that actually causes hypertension, tachycardia, so high blood pressure, rapid heart rate, and anxiety. So
all stuff that you should be aware of.
Don't want to take a lot of those. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. Dr. Brown is here of Griffin Hospital. And Dr. Brown, I saw today with monkeypox cases on the rise, not just here in the U.S., but across the globe. It looks like the World Health Organization, is set to hold an emergency meeting today to determine whether to classify the outbreak as a global health emergency. What?
Yeah.
What? Come on. Good grief. So what does that mean? If they classify it as a global emergency, like what does that mean? What should we be doing? And what?
Yeah. So what it means is that, certain areas in particular, one of the biggest issues becomes developing countries, because if it starts getting into developing countries, mm-hmm. Their ability to do infection control practices is a lot more limited than developed countries. So that becomes a real issue.
Got it.
And it becomes more predominant. The more people that get it, the more likely you can get exposed to it. And that becomes sort of the major issue associated. So I think the World Health Organization has to look at it and say, okay, is there enough cases now that we say, we need to have everybody on high alert when someone does develop it, that they're isolated for the appropriate period of time to prevent the spread. And we're finding more and more that, it's close contact, intimate contact. Those are the things that are spreading this. But it really takes, a real contact. Now, if you're very close, it can be spread by droplets. So obviously you need to be careful in that aspect. But you're not seeing the same sort of, obviously you're not seeing the same as we saw with pandemic flu, pandemic COVID, or we would see with pandemic flu.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Dr. Brown, because I did see like a New York senator last week said that he wants an investigation done on how monkeypox was handled in our country. But, you know, apart from that, I do think it's interesting because monkeypox has been around in other countries. It's just not really here in America.
Right.
But it is interesting because if you ask anybody, you know, how did it get here? Travel, of course. But it's not like we just started going to Africa. I mean, I went to South Africa in 2011, and I had never even really heard of monkeypox. I certainly wasn't screened for monkeypox. But, like, I am curious how it did end up, you know, now becoming a potential global emergency when it's been around for a while, for a long time.
Sure. That's actually a very interesting question and sort of goes with a lot of epidemiology and epidemiologists. So, you know, monkeypox has been around forever. I mean, it is actually, most viruses have been around forever. You know, initially it was found in monkeys, but it was really transmitted by rodents. That's sort of been the biggest issue. And then as any virus, and as we've learned from COVID-19, any virus can mutate and change. And the more people that potentially get infected by it, the more it can change. And that's sort of what we're seeing with monkeypox. Now, the good news is the vaccinia virus, the vaccinia vaccine, will actually cover for it. There's cross activity. The question is that do we start vaccinating people? And I think that's going to be the big question. Now, I want to clarify this vaccine is completely different than other vaccines. This is actually not a, it's actually not a, just a needle. It's a bifurcated, I want to say jab, because that's exactly what it is.
What do you mean a jab? What are you talking about?
So what it is it's actually a little device that has two little blades on it. And on the center is where the vaccine is, and then it actually goes jabs a little bit more, so it's not just like this little prick. It's actually a more of a jab. So you know people who have, I'm sure you've seen people who actually have the smallpox vaccine.
Yes.
And they have a sort of a scar on their shoulder.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what it's from, because it's not just a straight needle. So there's a lot of discussion about this, because this is a completely different way to vaccinate people, and it's not something that is pleasant. At least the process of getting it. So
yeah, it doesn't sound it. Sounds awful.
So you have to have a lot of conversations about this. And then, you know, the hope is that we'll be able to develop better vaccines, more specific vaccines, you know, mRNA vaccines, et cetera, that will actually cover for this. But again, that we know that takes 6 months to a year, and we don't know if this is going to be gone by then.
That's going to be a tougher sell. Now, you're only getting this vaccine if you contract monkeypox, right? At this point, we're not just getting people vaccinated against monkeypox. It's if you contract it.
No, it's actually going to be if you actually have close exposures.
Ooh, that's going to be a hard sell.
It's going to be a hard sell.
That's going to be a hard sell. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I would recommend looking up sort of the what the vaccine is for smallpox and vaccinia, because it's very interesting, this little device that's used.
It's very little, but it's very mighty, it sounds like.
Yes.
All right. Oof. All right. Well, Dr. Brown, we're certainly.
So again, I think there's a lot of discussion around this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, because it's not just, you know, just we're just going to start, you know, vaccinating people like we did for COVID-19. It doesn't spread like COVID-19. It is not a respiratory virus. You know, that's that COVID-19, flu, those are respiratory viruses. This is actually not a respiratory. This is actually technically a skin virus.
Got it. Okay. Well, Dr. Brown, we're certainly probably not going to be done with the monkeypox talks anytime soon. I appreciate you.
No, I don't. I think we're going to continue to have conversations about them, and hopefully it burns out. But I think people just need to be aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And time will tell. And of course, Doc, this is why when everyone was asking months ago, oh, COVID's slowing down, are you getting rid of Dr. Brown? What are you, nuts? I can't live without Dr. Brown. And so glad you're still on the show with us, Dr. Brown. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Melissa.
All right. We'll talk again next week. That's Dr. Brown here on WICC.